With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello and welcome to State of the Nation. I'm Brian McLean out of Central Texas, and we are live with today's News Talk. TNTRadio.live is our website. Now, I don't know if you're like me and you saw what went on this weekend on the House floor. We saw Ukrainian flags being handed out during the war appropriation bill. So, yes, stealing money from us and sending it to corrupt leaders overseas. Yeah, check. Who else? We're going to send some money to their corrupt buddies in the military-industrial complex. Check. That'll write a few paychecks. Marjorie Taylor Greene says Mike Johnson should resign. Why is she the only voice saying this? Of course, there's a couple more, but we're just not seeing enough. And a lot of Americans this day, today, Monday, who are catching up on what happened over the weekend are saying enough also. This is utterly ridiculous. $95 billion to wars in foreign nations and other borders while ours remains open. Wow. Let's say hello to Timothy Shea. Timothy Shea, great to see you here on State of the Nation. Happy Monday. Here we go into the absurdity once again, my friend.
Great to be here, Brian. You know, we've got breaking news. It looks like all the info is coming out too early. Watchers of this show know that Hunter's corrupt, that Joe's corrupt, but now the wider world is learning it. We've got two IRS agents, Brian, that look like they're going to be taking down Stumblebum Joe, his brother, and his son. And we also have new unredacted documents showing that Stumblebum Joe colluded with NARA to concoct a case against Trump. This doesn't look good.
Yeah, it doesn't. The whole thing is a mess. You know, when I look at Capitol Hill this week, Timothy, it's just like, wow, it is just like a, I don't know. It's like some sort of bad reality TV show at that point, halfway through the season, where they ply everybody with too much alcohol and everybody starts saying what they're really feeling and what they're really, you know, what their intentions actually are. It really feels that way, Timothy. It's a theater of the absurd right now.
It is theater of the absurd, and I still think that there is a significant likelihood, at least in a just world, that both Alvin Bragg, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, and New York State Attorney General Tish James might face bar discipline for their behavior in the two cases in New York. And of course, who knows what's going to happen down in Georgia.
Yeah, well, maybe Garland Favrito can fill us in a little bit. I'm sure he's got some thoughts on that later in the program today. We have a great program lined up.
Super lineup.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, I hope so, Timothy. I mean, you know, opening statements in the trial were like, he basically said what I said. This is absurd. This is absurd that this is even happening right now.
Yeah.
You know, and you heard in the top of the hour news break, Trump made comments about, you know, well, hey, if I'm not going to be immune from this, then neither should Biden. You know, let's put it all on the table, do full discovery here, and, you know, see where the worst transgressions against the American taxpayers are.
And of course, at 9:30 tomorrow morning, Judge Merchan is going to be holding a hearing to see whether Donald Trump violated his gag order. does find that Trump violated the gag order, because that'll be, and again, in New York State, we have something called interlocutory appeal, speaking between. So as soon as something bad happens at the trial court, boom, you get to take interlocutory appeal immediately to the appellate division for resolution. So I don't see this trial ending anytime soon.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to be reporting on it for more than a couple days here, Timothy. This may go all the way to, do you think this could go all the way to the election?
I think the appellate process certainly will.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And do you think Letitia James will get disbarred? I mean, that would be quite a win, I would say, for Trump.
In a just world, she would. This is highly unethical what she has done.
I think most people today are feeling like we don't live in a just world, though. So if she's not, that will certainly underscore, highlight, boldface, all that, capitalize that one.
Well, hopefully we'll get some common sense Democrats like Marty Dolan, who was on the show last week running against AOC. And of course, the Republican in that candidate, Tina Forte, is going to be formidable for AOC if she does manage to get by Marty. But, as a New Yorker, I would like to see a relatively sane, rational Democrat party. We might have policy disagreements, but don't be whack jobs.
I don't know. That's a lot to ask, Timothy,
I
but
know,
I don't know.
I
Well,
believe in
you
the
know what
Tooth
isn't?
Fairy and the Easter Bunny too, so what can you say?
Right. Well, you know what isn't a lot to ask? Giving us a follow on TNT, it's very easy to do. So we're on all the major social platforms. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, Gab, Gitter, and even more than that. So help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk at TNT.
Talk that matters.
For once, we just need to do what's best for this damn country and not what's best for the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Timothy, did you see that the Chicago Council approved $70 million for migrant care, even though they've got a giant voter backlash there? I mean, that's quite the scene there out of the Chicago City Council. This was on Friday, probably while we were on air. They greenlit an extra $70 million for the care of illegal immigrants, all right, or illegal aliens, illegal invaders, whatever you like to call them. Not really immigration. In the Windy City, despite a massive backlash from residents that foreign nationals are being prioritized over native Chicagoans.
Brian, I lived in New York City twice. The first time in Queens, in a neighborhood of townhouses, three triple deckers that had been built by Carlo Gambino. And you know what? Unlike most of this city, we did not have alternate side of the street parking. You could park on both sides of the street. And then I lived in Brooklyn, in statistically the safest neighborhood in the city, which was located next to statistically one of the least safe neighborhoods in New York, Red Hook, where the principal of Red Hook High was shot dead on the steps of Red Hook High coming out of school one day. Both of them were family neighborhoods. It snowed. The snow got taken by the garbage trucks over to the pier and dumped in the harbor. Everything worked. New York doesn't work anymore. None of these cities work anymore. They were better when they were being run by the mob. As Henry Hill says in the beginning of Goodfellas, what the feds never understood is that the mob was just a police force for wise guys. It was a tax. You paid the tax and nothing bad happened. The cities ran a lot better under the mob than they're running under Democrats.
The Democrats, they should have hired more mobsters, I suppose. Maybe we could.
Well, no. No, they decided to become mobsters.
Well, that's what I was getting to. And they're really
Yeah.
bad at it. They suck at being
Horrible.
mobsters. It's just
Horrible.
like they use mob tactics left and right, but they do it in just the most utterly sloppy way you could possibly imagine it, such that you can't even make movies about it. If you're going to make a
No.
movie about some of these things, you have to watch the movie about Barry Seal or something like that. Like, there's
The
only certain
gang that's shooting, no,
characters.
even, Tim Conway and the gang that couldn't shoot straight, okay? It's that level of absurdity. Look, if any of these people were actual mobsters in an actual mob movie, they'd be dead in real one.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. It is absolutely just crazy. Hey, did you notice Gateway Pundit is going after Mike Johnson today pretty hard? They're talking about this thing with his son and
Yep.
slagging them for apparently monitoring each other's porn usage, which is very weird, but wow, my goodness. Mike Johnson certainly is no longer a shining light amongst mainstream conservatives at this point, is he?
Well, look, everybody in DC has these tawdry secrets to hide, and that one's all the cringe. That's as bad as Joe Biden. Well, maybe not as bad as Joe Biden showering with his 14-year-old daughter.
True, true. Yeah, it's that's definitely a next level.
But it's pretty
cringe.
This
still is like supreme cringe.
You know, fathers are supposed to set examples for son, not sharing in their vices and you know, being each other's accountability pal. What's interesting is that Democrats are now openly supporting Johnson, saying that if Republicans do, you know, the Democrats are coming out in saying that if the Republicans do move to vacate the chair, that they will support Johnson. And Benny Johnson and others were crowing over the fact that Hakeem Jeffries especially came out and said Democrats got everything they wanted out of that Ukraine bill. So Mike Johnson is, again, I said, you know, the only thing that makes sense to me is if he did it intentionally to get removed because he doesn't want the job. He didn't want it in the first place. Maybe this is his way out. I don't know. That's just the only thing that makes sense to me.
Well, that's a kind one right there. I'm thinking this guy has been compromised in some way.
That's
or another.
What I'm thinking too. Yeah, down at the down at the haunted house skiff.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think the haunted house is a real thing. Did you notice also we had a devastating blaze at Lineage Logistics, which is a cold storage facility in the state of Washington. The pictures of this are, they look pretty nasty. I think this is pretty much breaking. Looks like it happened, news came out about an hour ago. Oh, this article came out about an hour ago, but the fire erupted early Sunday morning. So late last night, it's unleashing thick black smoke filled with potentially hazardous chemicals. So yet another industrial fire slash accident here. Pretty interesting.
Yeah, up in Findlay, Washington, you know, I feel for the good folks up there. I hope that the chemical toxins don't have too much of a negative effect on the people up there.
Yeah, it looks like a really nasty cloud. They're telling people to stay inside, and they say the cause of the fire remains undetermined, with investigators likely to follow once the situation is under control. So,
and it was a cold storage facility, but I believe it's a chemical plant, Brian. There's apparently no truth to the rumor that they were storing Hunter's backup laptop and Joe's daughter's alternate diary. Look, that's absurd. All we can do is joke about this stuff. Things are crazy.
Open goals for jokes like this one, that's for sure. So what actually happened here with Letitia James? Let's expand on this. So a judge today smacked down, this is of course in the words of Christina Layla over at Gateway Pundit. She says a judge today smacked down Marxist tyrant Letitia James and ruled in favor of Trump in a fight over that $175 million bond. So on Friday, Letitia James asked the judge to void Trump's $175 million bond that he posted to appeal the civil fraud case. And James argued that California-based Knight Specialty Insurance Company is not approved to do business in New York. Can you make this make sense to me, Timothy? Yeah. I'm still trying
not
to understand
just a
this.
Judge. Yeah, not just a judge. It was the Crypt Keeper himself, Arthur Engoron. This was even a bridge too far for Engoron. It's outlandish. You know, she's trying desperately to get Trump bankrupted so that he can't campaign. That's what this is all about. And not only to smear his reputation, but to deprive him of his treasure so that he can't campaign effectively. And Engoron even said, this is absurd. Get out of here. Her argument is that, okay, what if Trump defaults on the bond? What if he ends up owing the money? Is this insurance company going to be sufficient to have assets sufficient to cover? You know, she belied, Brian, a complete lack of understanding of the insurance industry. That's not how insurance works. Okay, Knight is not putting up, it's not collateralizing its own bond here. What it did is it went to Lloyd's, over to Gallagher, one of the companies that do business in the Lloyd's marketplace, over to AIG in Germany. They went to the reinsurers and they purchased an insurance policy for the $175 million. So they issue the bond. They've got an insurance policy that if the bond has to be paid, then the insurance policy is going to pay it. The reinsurers are going to cover it, and they have more than ample assets. Engoron, in this instance, actually knows more than than Jabba the James.
Even Reverend Kane from Poltergeist 2 is having to admit now that this is just ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. All right, well, you know, Joe Biden made that funny comment, that little quip about cannibals last week, right? And this I just find completely priceless. Prime Minister James Marape of Papua New Guinea issued a scathing critique of Joe Biden in the wake of these statements just yesterday, following these comments made by Biden that insinuated the wartime fate of his uncle involved cannibalistic acts by the natives of New Guinea. This is just hilarious. You gotta love this, Timothy.
Meanwhile, the magic mushroom at the White House took Steve Ducey's question and said, I don't think it's right that you're making fun of a veteran that lost his life at World War II. It's like, A, he's not making fun of the veteran. He's making fun of the veteran's uncle, who's a brain dead mushmelon. Two, all of a sudden you care about veterans? You couldn't tell by anything else this administration has done. They've cut back on services at the VA. They've gone after GI benefits. They just argued before the Supreme Court on Friday that GI Bill benefits should be limited to veterans. They lost that case. This administration doesn't give a rat's patoot about veterans, except when it gives them an opportunity to virtue signal on behalf of Stumblebum Joe.
Yeah, yeah. Marape said, quote, while the president's remarks may have been a slip of the tongue, however, my country does not deserve to be labeled as such. World War II was not the doing of my people. However, they were needlessly dragged into a conflict that was not their doing. The remains of World War II lie scattered all over PNG, including the plane that carried President Biden's uncle.
You know, I think obviously far more likely than cannibals is that, you know, jungle rot took them, right? Whether it's bugs and bacteria or whether it was marsupials and monkeys. I think that unfortunately they probably were eaten, but not by the good people of Papua New Guinea.
Yes. And Joe Biden, they do not deserve that kind of slander. My goodness.
It's all libel.
Right. You're watching State of the Nation. We are live on today's News Talk. This is TNT.
TNT's Jason Burmess.
Now, whether you like Donald Trump or you think he's literally Hitler, have we ever been in a situation where a person who has led this country could not take a day off from what is obviously a show trial in every respect, way, shape, and form to go see their kid graduate high school? Oh, Jason, he's a billionaire. He doesn't care. That's his like fifth kid. Who cares? How dare you, Jason? He's already got Don Jr. and Eric. He got to go to those. Look, the bottom line is this is grotesque on every level, and it shows how lawfare is being waged against anyone who goes against the narrative, even the President of the United States. And this is very dangerous.
Jason Burmess on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Although Karl Marx's economic theories have been consigned to the dustbin of history, failing everywhere they've been implemented, his ideas, sadly, have not. Instead, they've been moved from the economic sphere into the realm of culture. Joining us now is the co-author of Next Gen Marxism, What Is It and How to Combat It, Catherine Gorka. Kate, welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
In Suicide of the West, James Burnham, himself a former communist, remarked that communists divide the world into the zone of peace and the zone of war, with lasting peace reserved for the region that's already subject to communist rule. An analogous division occurs in Islam, with the distinction between the House of Islam and the House of War. To what extent are we in the West fighting a two-front war with the barbarians, totalitarian Marxism and totalitarian Islam, already inside the gates and taking over our governmental, educational, and cultural institutions?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I would say, you know, we're pretty far along down this dark path, which is unfortunate. And what's interesting is the two are not disconnected. So one of the things that my co-author and I, Mike Gonzalez, and I discovered in the course of doing the research for this book was the extent to which European and Latin American Marxists, A, have been colluding with each other, but B, trying to get involved in the United States. And from the sort of early 2000s, when they started really, you know, pushing for similar movements in the United States, certainly the pro-Palestinian groups have been there. So, you know, the fact that you're seeing what you're seeing on today's college campuses is very much a product of the next gen Marxists.
Interesting. What would you say to someone who's looking at the geopolitical picture and the national political picture here and is maybe looking one layer up at the United Nations, the World Economic Forum factor, the technocratic factor? I mean, we've got so many forces from within our government that seem to be much worse than ideological Marxists. They seem to be using Marxism, and then the media seems to be playing, the two political parties against each other as fascists versus Marxists, when that really doesn't describe very many people in the country, I would think, you know, by and large, statistically.
Well, you know, I would actually differ with you there. You know, perhaps there aren't a ton of people who would self-identify as Marxists, but if you understand Marxism, you see the degree to which his basic ideas are largely shaping much of what's going on today. So the very notion that, you know, the world is divided into two halves, right? The oppressor and the oppressed, and that these two halves cannot be reconciled to each other, that they have to sort of fight it out until one succeeds and the other, I don't know what happens to them. They get killed off or whatever, right? They disappear. You know, that is Marx. That is pure Marx. Yes, the economic aspect of it has kind of died out. But that notion of conflict is very much alive and well. And that is what's shaping the culture. You know, the other thing is you look at the degree to which particularly young people today are embracing ideas of socialism or embracing the idea that we have to fundamentally change this country. That's all Marxism. And it has deeply, deeply infused our culture.
Well, we know that the Soviet Union was behind the anti-war protests in the 1960s and took every opportunity to divide us internally so that we wouldn't be directing our attention toward them. Of course, in Vietnam, they were also supporting their fellow communists in the North. Really, nothing has changed, has it?
No, and you have to, I mean, that's a great point. And, you know, I think you have to look really hard at what our enemies are doing to divide us. And this is one thing that we are not doing nearly enough work. The Trump administration started doing this work to look at elements of disinformation. What's China doing in this country to divide us? What's Iran doing? What's Venezuela doing? What's Russia doing? Unfortunately, I'm going to argue, I think we're still fighting the last war. You know, the fact that we've got so many people at Defense Intelligence Agency and elsewhere, you know, fighting in a more sort of traditional sense, instead of really paying attention to information warfare and the ways that our enemies can further divide us. And so you have to really ask yourself the degree to which the conflict that we're seeing today within our country isn't being exacerbated by external enemies.
Are the external forces worse than the Central Intelligence Agency, in your opinion?
Oh, yes, 100%. I mean, yes, really? I'm going to say yes. I mean, come on. You know, oh my gosh, that's a really tough one. But, you know, the bottom line is, yes, the CIA has been weaponized. Yes, the FBI and the Department of Justice have been weaponized and way overly politicized. But I'm still going to argue that I think our foreign enemies are far worse, because the people inside those organizations, A, are still American, still mostly subject to American law. And I think they're still can be salvaged. I really do.
I love that optimism. And we're going to dig into the policy and doctrinal differences between President Trump, under whom you served, and Stumblebum Joe after these headlines right here on State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
Great news.
Good news, everyone.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, has expressed his approval and encouragement for recent military actions against Israel, describing them as showcasing the nation's resolve. Former President Donald Trump is addressing a Supreme Court hearing set for April 25th regarding whether he has presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for actions on January 6, 2021. Former President Trump has successfully secured a $175 million bond, reduced from a previously set $454 million.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk, this is TNT Radio.
Katie, one of Karl Marx's most devoted acolytes, Saul Alinsky, wrote Rules for Radicals 50 years ago. And with a brief four-year interregnum from 2017 to 2021, we've basically had a government that has been following Rules for Radicals to the T ever since 2009. Describe for us the differences between what you experienced in the Trump administration and what you're seeing out of the Biden administration, because one of the things that makes people's eyes twitch is how the media keeps talking about what a fascist Trump is, and people saying they're not worried about a bloodbath, they're worried about the concentration camps if Trump wins. We've got 4 years of experience with this man. He's no dictator. However, under Joe Biden, we're seeing marked signs of fascism, communism, totalitarianism, whatever you want to call it. How do you characterize the two administrations and the two approaches to geopolitics?
Well, I'm going to say, first of all, I think for people to understand the importance of Saul Alinsky is a key to understanding that question. Saul Alinsky was absolutely pivotal in taking sort of Soviet Leninist techniques of organizing them and really translating them to an American idiom. Not only that, but also helping to build structures to create organizations here in the United States. Very, very influential, very impactful. You know, it goes way back. And I think that's one of the most important threads that we talk about in our book. It is just so hard to talk about the difference between the treatment of the Trump administration and the treatment of the Biden administration. I honestly, within the press, I just cannot believe that there aren't more people that see the insanity. You know, what I will also say, you know, one of the things that I saw from inside the Trump administration was not only the incredibly organized campaign of attack of Trump himself, but also many, many people in his administration. You know, at one point, Sebastian, my husband, he was one of the ones really targeted. At one point, he counted that within a 3-month period, he'd been the subject of 400 attack articles. Think about that, you know. But it was also from inside. I mean, one of the things that many of us didn't even wake up till kind of too late was the efficacy of the Lincoln Project. You know, these are ostensibly fellow Republicans. I don't think Mike was ever a part of the Lincoln Project, though. I mean, talk about Mike in a different thing. But there were people who were openly members of the Lincoln Project, claimed it, and then they were actively, serving as political appointees appointed by Trump and yet undermining him. But I will tell you this, I think that Trump himself is so much wiser now to the level of evil that's out there. And I will say as well, there are many people who served him in the first administration that are preparing for a second administration. And I think they are going to be much smarter, much more aggressive, much more forward-leaning in undermining that kind of subversion. So I think it's going to be a whole new day if he can get reelected.
Do you think he will? What do you think is going to happen here? How do you think he's going to fare against all this lawfare? I mean, we've never really seen so much a politician up against so much. And a lot of Americans at this point just saw what happened this weekend. And they're feeling like they don't really have a party anymore if they're, not on the Liberal Party.
I worry less about the impact of the lawfare than I do about election integrity. I still think our biggest threat comes from mail-in ballots, 100%. I can say here in Virginia, I've been really deeply involved. I actually just got elected as chair of the Fairfax GOP. So I have a good insider view of what's happening with election integrity. There across the country, there are tremendous efforts, and many, many, many citizens have stepped up locally to ensure the integrity of elections. But there are just some things that are really hard to get a handle on. Mail-in ballots is one of them. And so all I can say is if people care about elections and they care about Trump winning, they have to get involved. They have to step up and be election officers or, poll watchers. They have to get involved in some way to help ensure the integrity of our elections.
One of the things I always say is that a Democrat has never stabbed me in the back, but I'm like a porcupine with all the knives I've taken from fellow Republicans. I think a lot of us were overjoyed to see that the GOP is going to make an all-out effort for election integrity nationally, not just in the six battleground states, because as we all know, every county now is a battleground. Every county is now a border county. I was really encouraged by the moves that the new GOP leadership has taken in really a short time, less than a month.
I would agree with you, but I'm going to also say again that the problems that ail us cannot be fixed in Washington alone. So much of this has to be addressed at the local level. And I'm telling you, election integrity is a huge lift. There are so many moving pieces. And that's why Americans have to take this on as a personal burden and get engaged. There's just so much that needs to be done.
Yeah, and the cybersecurity is one of the scariest parts about that. I agree with you. The mail-in scam is exactly that. It's a terrible scam. It's a huge vulnerability. But the more we learn about the cybersecurity posture of all these machines that are being used, that's something that, I feel like most Americans don't have much of a say in. You know what I mean? They're not showing us the LNR tests. They're not showing us if remote controls turned on or not. They're not telling us until after the fact what, foreign nations, Serbia in some cases, are logging into machines in Arizona and stuff like that. So what are you finding about that? Do you have any thoughts about the machines themselves, Dominion, Fox backing down?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will just say that, like here in Fairfax County, we've had an incredible team working on election integrity. We just had a conversation about this. They said when they started this a few years ago, we were not allowed to observe the LNR tests. I'm going down next week to observe them. So, I'm telling you, it may seem like sort of an impossible lift for everyday citizens, but it really isn't. It's not rocket science. And all it takes is for people to get involved, they get a little bit educated, they learn a little bit more, they find ways to engage. We can win this. I'm telling you, I'm 100% convinced that if more citizens will step up and engage, it will make a huge difference.
I agree wholeheartedly. I co-founded MAGA Institute with a good friend of mine who just ran for Congress in NC10. Now is not the time to throw up your hands in frustration. Now is the time to roll up your sleeves and get to work, because everything is local. You know, Tip O'Neill had it right 40 years ago. Politics is local. Katie, we're going to have to leave it there. The book is Next Gen Marxism, What Is It and How to Combat It? It's already sold out on Amazon. They're waiting for reprints. So get in queue, order yourself a copy, or better yet, a few, and give them to your friends. Katie, can't wait to have you back on State of the Nation. Thanks so much. Do you have any final words?
No, just thanks so much for having me.
All right. You're listening to State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than a million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
On a virtual road, you can test the limits of your driving ability to see how fast you can go under the most extreme conditions, like when it's dark, when the weather's bad, or when the unexpected happens. The higher the speed, the harder the impact. But driving isn't a game or a race. When you're on the road, just 10 miles per hour over the limit can mean the difference between life and death. You're responsible for people's lives and your own. Slow down and save lives.
Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
All right, joining us now is the Signal Director and Political Strategy and GOP pollster joining us here. It's great to see Mitch Brown joining us. Mitch, welcome to State of the Nation.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Timothy. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us. We want to talk to you about some of the key groups that matter right now in the presidential election. And when I was looking at our notes getting into this, I love the title for the first group here. Let me just read it. Ticked off, diverse, young, working class voters. Let's start with that class.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this is something I think people have been picking up on, obviously, through the Republican Party and since 2016. But how I kind of like to frame this is that you often hear people say, hey, what the swing voter is now is the suburban white woman. And I think Trump changed all of that. Obviously, in 2016, him winning the Rust Belt kind of showed a lot of people, hey, there's a different way to 270 than what is traditional for a Republican. And so when we looked at 2016 compared to 2020, and then what we're seeing now with voters, we've noticed this group. It's mostly men, but it's working class, blue collar voters under the age of 40. And these are people earning under $100,000, for the most case, earning under 75. And what we're seeing is they're highly dissatisfied with both parties. I'm not saying that these are people who love Donald Trump, but what they're seeing is people who are depressed with the state of the country right now, with the state of the economy, and with the state of their own lives. So this group, we've seen, again, they're pessimistic across the board. And when we go back and look, this is a group that turned out in 2016, but did not show up to vote in 2020. And again, this is that forgotten Trump voter. So what we're seeing now, again, is a race for that. Because when you're looking at the Biden team, they're not really pursuing that group. They're just trying to retain everyone who showed up for them in 2020, while the Trump team needs to go about in these blue collar areas, focusing on this ticked off young voter.
I think you're absolutely correct. I called on January 26th, 2016, that Donald Trump would be the GOP nominee. It was before even the Iowa caucuses. And I was able to do it because we had Dish Network installed. And the young guy that came out to install the Dish, I got to talking with him. He was 26 years old, smart young guy, never went to college, went right from high school to working in the cable industry, and figured out that he could make more per installation if he was out on his own than he was as an employee of Dish Network. So he went out and he bought a Mercedes Sprinter and kitted it out. So he had a rolling electronics mobile workshop there. He had three homes. He owned his own home free and clear, and he had two rental properties that were paying themselves off. And when the first mortgage was paid off, he was going to buy a third rental property. He had a wife and three children. He was middle America. He was the kind of American that Washington, D.C., and I can say this because I lived there, has no idea who he is, what he thinks, what he wants, or what he thinks of the country and its leadership. And this young man spoke reverently of Donald Trump. He didn't say Trump. He said Mr. Trump. Because I asked him, do you vote? What are you thinking? Are you following the presidential election? He had never voted before. And he said, I cannot wait to vote for Mr. Trump. And sure enough, Donald Trump swept upstate New York, not only in the 2016 primary, as he did just now in 2024 for the third time, but did very well upstate in the general election, even though it was against Hillary Clinton, our former senator. This is absolutely one of the groups that the Trump campaign needs to go over after. Another is urban America. The young black men are calling him Uncle Trump. The young black women are calling him Daddy Trump. Hispanic Americans are now starting to flock to him. Are you seeing the impact that the Democrats' ill-fated lawfare campaign is having on the polls?
Yeah, no, 100%. That's resonating with the community. And how I, again, like to talk about this one is we're not saying that Trump is going to win the black vote, but Trump hitting 20 to 25% changes
this
entire
election. Yeah.
And especially if you go to these urban centers, if he can peel off 5% from Biden in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania's over. Trump wins Pennsylvania. If he can do the same thing in Atlanta, Trump wins Georgia. It's as simple as that. So when we're talking about that group, that's all you need, again, is for people to resonate, understand these attacks. They've seen this weaponized against their own communities before. So again, it's something that they can align to. Also, when you talk about the Hispanic community, that's obviously already been shifting towards Trump. It's just how much more is he going to grow there? You see Florida. I recently did a statewide poll there. And now not just the Cuban population, but all Hispanics in Florida are now R plus two on the generic ballot. So if Trump's hitting 47, 48% with the Hispanic vote, again, not only is that going to propel him to win, but if he can get other Republicans to just clear 40%, it's a success down ticket.
Yeah.
And I noticed the term ideologically moderate, more ideologically moderate than the GOP base came up there. I like that because I really feel like we're kind of have the wool pulled over our eyes sometimes when we live in the news feeds about, you know, what it means to be a Democrat or a Republican, when I think the majority of the United States is probably center right, center left, you know, libertarian leaning or DGAF party, as I like to call them. So a lot of times these more extreme things, like, you know, for example, $95 billion war deals are really not that interesting to as many Americans as the mass media cartel would have us believe.
Oh, I can tell you this from numerous times. I've led focus groups across the country, and that foreign aid is not a winner with anyone. If you sit down with anyone who's center left to center right, they don't understand it and they don't support it, especially, again, when they're seeing what's happened to their own communities. I recently did one up in Northwest Ohio. And again, if you've seen what has been taken from them, what that place was 50 years ago compared to now, you're not going to have anyone that wants to support funding Ukraine. And when you talk about like the ideological, like moderates and that center base, what you see is when you describe some of these America First principles to people and you remove Trump from the equation or you remove political sentiment from it and just explain these types of policies. Hey, investing in our own communities, not communities overseas, cutting our spending, doing these things, cutting down on illegal immigration. Again, they're popular positions across the board. We've gotten to this point where we've had some people who, again, get turned off by the messenger itself. But these are the principles that are moving forward. And to build a coalition for Republicans to continue to win and to gain ground, it can't be the old neocon country club Republican of the past. It is a new day, and it is a much more populist tinge to the Republican electorate and the moderate people who are going to swing our way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Brian and I were in Memphis at Freedom Fest last summer, along with the rest of the TNT crew, and got to hear Bobby Kennedy Jr., and he gave a very competent, interesting, intellectually curious speech. He outlined how he was able to get GE to pay for the cleanup of the Hudson River using economics, not government power. He's an interesting character and somewhat of a wild card. How does he impact the election in a two-way with Biden or Trump and in a three-way?
Yeah, so when we run it through our data, we run with two different simulations of it. We do it one with Bobby Kennedy as just an independent, and then second with him running as a libertarian. Because obviously, like with the libertarian label, you're going to get a little bit more of it to be right-leaning. Because again, if we thought like the Von Mises Institute, those kind of ideological spectrums lean towards the right wing. But when we just test them out and there's a third party, again, we're talking within the margins here, but it's a pro for the Trump team. We're talking like, again, polling 52 to 48 against Biden. But where it's important is the states that have a proclivity of voting third party. You look again at some of these Midwest states, Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin, they have always had an overperformance by candidates like this. So when you're looking at him, he again was rising even higher. I think his VP pick knocked him off for a few people. Because again, when you have some of these people who are all who do consume a lot of news and still want to vote third party, they're kind of tuned in. So they see that he chose a pretty far left VP candidate. So that's going to take a little bit away from him on the right. So again, I still think him appealing to the left is going to kind of help Trump a little bit. Because one, with Trump, you have a base that's so determined and people that are so loyal to him. I think it would be a different story if there was a different Republican at the top of the ticket. But right now, again, it's a small net win for Trump on the ballot. We'll see how that further progresses. But again, this election is going to come down to five states in 10 to 15,000 voters across each of those three states. So if Kennedy outperforms in Arizona or Wisconsin or Georgia, it throws everything into the mix.
Yeah, that could make things interesting for sure. And you say that's largely a younger group of people. Interesting, kind of reminds me of like the Ron Paul revolution, you know, in 2008 and 2012. You know, where you get a guy who's, you know, I don't know that he planned to appeal to that crowd so much, but I remember the mass media cartel had to go to great lengths to not show some of the crowds that would show up for Ron Paul. Do you think RFK has that kind of pull? Because, I mean, those were some pretty impressive crowds that Ron Paul brought.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be Ron Paul level. Again, people are worried. I mean, that's why you see the Kennedy family paraded out there at the White House, all 27 of them, to go endorse Biden. So people are worried. Does he have the charisma to pull very large crowds? I'm not sure. And it's interesting, again, because you have people, if we talk about the vaccine issue, obviously very outspoken there. So that's drawing a certain group of people. But then he says other things about what he believes is systemic racism and things like that and loses that crowd. Same thing on the left. He has a couple of things that they enjoy about him. So again, I think a lot of this is people are dissatisfied with both Trump and Biden when you look at the numbers across the board. Like they're both underwater in a favorability terms. So it's people seeking that third candidate. he also has, again, the legacy of having that name attached to him, which is going to help a little bit, just again, for nostalgic purposes. But the man himself, again, it seems like he's trying to fight for two different lanes here. We'll see what they actually do with the kind of the resource spend at the end and which states it's in. But I think he needs to have a more uniform kind of coalition of people for him to draw the Ron Paul level of crowd.
Yeah, I think it would have been a much more interesting campaign had he named Tulsi Gabbard as his running mate. Ms. Shanahan makes me think almost as though he's trying to peel off votes from Stumblebum Joe.
Yeah, no, obviously, if Tulsi was the VP pick, I think that would have been a troubling sign for the Trump team. But again, now he's taken someone who has for a little bit was a phenomenon on the right because of his appearances on Rogan and what he said about the vaccines. But again, now a lot of those people who are very attuned to social media, and that's where they heard about him and started following him, see what has happened with the VP pick and see what she said prior, the boards that she sits on, what she's donated to, and are running for back to the Trump team. It's
right. Right. And what's the third voter type that you looked at?
Yeah. So again, the third voter type that, are we talking about just for with those three candidates?
No, with the overall here in your polling. So we had basically the young, diverse working class, and then we had the voters who supported Trump, but then chose RFK perhaps when presented a ballot. Like, is there a third classification that you looked at in this?
Yeah, you get again some of the Trump protest Republicans that they can't bring themselves to vote for Biden. And again, I work in DC. I know how the establishment works. There's some people that have candidly told me, like in Virginia, that they will vote Republican everywhere down ticket and will choose Kennedy just purely as a Trump protest vote. They can't bring themselves to vote for Biden, but they also claim that they can't bring themselves to vote for Trump. So you have a very small group that can't even accept that Trump pill to do it. And that's where you're losing them. They're people who are just stuck in the neocon traditional ways. Again, it's going to be a small group. And when you get to election day, those people, again, kind of feel the pressure to vote or probably won't show up to vote.
And what about that factor, people not showing up to vote? I've heard a lot of people say, hey, I don't like this. You know, these guys none of these guys represent me. They're all super old. And look at them. They won't even... You know, they're not even going to let one of them debate. One of them's probably not even going to debate. I mean, would you agree with my assessment that something is going to happen that makes it such that Biden does not have to debate Trump?
Yeah, I mean, I assume that they're going to have a bunch of these stations say that they won't televise it. They won't give Trump the platform. If you watch MSNBC or CNN, I like to keep it on in the office sometimes. You'll see them, Trump goes up to a podium and they say, we'll let you know if he says anything of importance. They're refusing to give him a platform, which is also great for Trump. Again, all of these things are better for him. Again, I would love this if I was the running the Trump campaign right now. Please give us more ammo to say that we're attacked, because what's yeah. great about this and why this election is going to turn out like 16 instead of like 20 is Trump is great on the attack. It's very hard to be on the attack when you are in the White House and have to defend your record. You have to defend what's going on in the world with COVID and things like that. That's not where you're suited, because the buck stops with you. So Trump was in a hard place there. It's very hard to attack. But now we can go and attack and say, look at what your life is like now compared to 4 years ago. This is what happened, and people won't let me talk. They're attacking me because they want to keep it this way. It's a great position for him to be in. And when it came to that, the turnout that you talked about there, again, this is what's the best thing for the Trump campaign is there's a lot of people who reluctantly voted for Biden because they were sick of Trump and thought that this was the best way forward. Those people are going to be very hard to get to show up for Biden this time. The Trump factor, he already is going to turn out people who did not vote in 22. Again, he has that just natural base where he's sitting at such a high turnout rate for his people. That's the big countering effect for the Biden campaign. They should be very afraid of if their people are going to show up.
Yeah, and the provable, demonstrable fact is that the left can't meme. And on the right, the memes just write themselves. I mean, the one I love the best is Trump and Biden's faces superimposed on Obi-Wan Kenobi's and Darth Vader's. And Joe, if you strike me down, I'll be more powerful than ever. I mean, it's just, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, no. And I mean, every day there's new ammunition. I mean, he, I guess, claimed that his uncle was eaten by cannibals.
Yeah.
Which the White House had to say, well, it wasn't a lie. It was just, I mean, the, you know, like the emotion of it was true. He was just trying to honor someone. So the rest of it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but right, the memes came out instantly. We had the dolls. Yeah. We had the Uncle Bosey doll in the cannibal doll package, the twin package. We had the movie poster. I mean, instantly, like within an hour of Biden saying that, the memes were already out.
No, again, he gives so much fuel to the flames. It's great.
Open goals. Now all Trump needs to do is come out and condemn Pfizer and Moderna, and then I'll be very interested. I'm still waiting on that. And to say that he would release Julian Assange. Okay, Mitch, we're just about out of time. Where's the best place for people to find your work?
Yeah, I could just Google Signal. Again, we're the nation's most accurate Republican polling firm. Did polling for Trump in 2020. Most recently just did Vivek Ramaswamy, the president. Got a bunch of good public stuff we put out there, and we're here to answer anyone's questions.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's Signal with a C, C-I-G-N-A-L. Okay, Mitch, thank you so much for joining us. We'll look forward to having you back on State of the Nation again. Stay tuned after top of the hour news with TNT. We'll be back with more State of the Nation right here on TNT.